You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. Happy holidays, everyone, and we're indeed having a cheery one at OneOfUs.net because of our brand new beer sponsor. Everyone say hello to Circle Brewing. You can visit them at circlebrewing.com or come to their tap room in Austin, Texas at 2340 West Breaker Lane, Suite B. But these are A-quality craft beers all the way. Quite a few of their beers are available to buy at your local quality beer retailer in the can or the bottle. My personal fave is the Blur. Their Hefeweizen that I've been regularly quoted as saying is the finest hefe made in America. Or their delicious Ladybird IPA. But visit the tap room for seasonal treats that will definitely delight your taste buds. Now that's what the Ghost of Christmas Present showed us. The Ghost of Christmas Future has a more dismal outlook, but it depends on you to keep the apocalyptic future where OneOfUs.net no longer exists from ever happening. We depend on subscribers to keep the site running. We literally cannot put out our shows without you. And that ghoulish specter is even now pointing down at the gravestone with our name on it. Please think about becoming a subscriber, get lots of bonus content, and keep one of us from joining the darkest timeline.
So technically, the full title of this movie is Mirai of the Future, but Mirai, as established here, is also the name Future in Japanese, so it's the future of the future. So then what's the past of the future or the present of the future in this
case?
That's
the link to the Mirai.
Legend of Zelda, Mirai to the future, link to the what? Exactly. Something like that.
Exactly.
Link to the past was the best one, by the way.
Absolutely, 100%. I agree with that statement. Hot take.
Still play it.
Same. Well, aside from video game stuff, the movie we're talking about here is a new anime film called Mirai. Like I said, the full title is Mirai of the Future, and I can't even begin to pronounce this in Japanese, so I won't try. But anyway.
Mudai no Mudai. I'm pretty sure that's what it is.
Oh, there we go. Which, by the way, you're hearing a new voice on here, so I'm Justin Zarian, and over here we have Bradley Martin. How you doing?
Hey!
And I'm Mike.
And then, oh yeah, we got Mike. Woo! First time on the Screener Squad. That's awesome.
Yeah. And yes. I do weird, terrible Japanese accents sometimes.
Yeah,
I watched a lot
good.
Of Joseph. I watched good. A lot of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, so I do a good Joseph Joestar. Old Joseph Joestar.
You should have heard our. You should hear a review of The Mercy. We do the worst British accents possible.
Oh God!
Just for fun. So now this movie. So this is being touted as one of the big Oscar contenders in Japan. You know, because every year there's at least one anime film they try to make the circuits with. You know, usually a Miyazaki film. Sometimes it's a Studio Ghibli like spin-off film that's not directly Miyazaki. But lately, G Kids has been pushing a lot of content from their stuff, and this is the newest one. It premiered at Cannes. It's Yeah, so I don't recognize a lot of the filmmakers on here, because let's see, who's the director on this movie? It's Mamoru Hosada. I'm sure that's a guy I'm supposed to be familiar with.
Yeah, that's the thing about Japanese directors and stuff, is they're like, I know that guy from something I watched, probably.
Oh, I think he did Summer Wars, right? Yeah. Summer Wars was a big one.
He did The Boy and the Beast as well.
Yeah, he did Wolf Children.
That was a good one.
Dude, he got his start on Digimon the movie.
That's amazing.
Shigeyasu Yamauchi.
Yeah. So, yes, this is his new movie. You know what? Let's see. Mike, since you're the new guy on here, can you tell the good people what the general premise of this movie is?
The general premise is that Kun is a four-year-old boy who's the only child of a couple at first, and then they get a new kid named Mirai. And it's mostly about him dealing with the bringing of this child, as well as fantastical elements that help him deal with this new change, as well as some stuff involving his parents.
Yeah, because it's weird where, normally a lot of this movie is based in a very realistic tone, where it's just dealing with parenting and child rearing and jealousy with siblings and that stuff. And then every now and then, it seems like Kun apparently was born with a little bit of acid in his blood, because he'll go on these crazy, magical, realism, surreal trips to see, his dog will become a fully sentient person. At some point, he actually sees a future version of his sister. And then there's a couple other details we won't spoil here, obviously. But just
it's
these...
all without warning, too. It just happens.
Yeah, which this is kind of one thing I have with this movie, where I really do enjoy this movie. But I feel like one of the things that actually is a little weak in this film is the magical realism. Because I'm like, on the one hand, that's obviously where all the most fantastical and crazy elements of the story come in. But yeah, it always seems like they always just come out of nowhere. Except for the part, though, I have to say, this movie does seem to establish a rhythm at some point. Like, I don't know if you guys know this, too. There's always a certain structure for the way that this movie is being done. So it's like, yeah, Coon gets because starts acting like a brat. He does something crappy, like he hits his sister or he yells at his mom. And then he has a crazy sequence where he goes out to the garden and he gets sent to some crazy, like, again, I won't even fully spoil. He gets shown a fantastical thing. He comes back. He acts nice again. And then the film resets and does the exact same pattern over and over again.
Yeah, it's like a beat. It's like, asshole, fantastical adventure, asshole, fantastical adventure. It's like, well, what the fuck, dude? Like, stop being an asshole.
Yeah, I mean, and I get it. It's like, yeah, sure, fine. He's a four-year-old kid and he's going to be a little jealous and stuff. But they came to the problem where I never felt like Coon was learning in this movie. And I don't know. Again, it's the hard thing of trying to be realistic. It's like, yeah, four-year-old kids don't learn all these lessons all at once kind of thing. But when you get shown the same exact thing happening over and over and over again, I don't know. I got a little fatigued by that. I mean, did either of you guys feel that way?
Well, the issue I had, yeah, was very similar to that because he would be taught something and he'd be like, that's amazing, and then immediately never do anything with that information. He would be like, you know, my sister's not a bad person. I'm going to go hit her again. And it's like, what the fuck?
Yeah. No, seriously, like, he'll just forget the lesson just because we need to have another fantastical sequence. And I just, I don't know. I feel like I almost wish this movie was actually more realistic. Because some of my favorite moments in this movie are the moments where they're just dealing with the parents trying to raise the kids, talking about their problems with trying to be good parents, the brother, you know, feeling his jealousy towards his sister. Like, those moments, when they happen, they're actually kind of effective.
It's very genuine whenever some of this stuff happens. Because, well, the thing is, I'm the youngest of my family, but I've always heard, you know, I've always seen it where the oldest, who was an only child, now has to deal with the fact that their love is now split. And mm-hmm. So it's like, well, fuck. Like, they become super jealous. And that's why, like, I'll spoil the first sequence only because it made me wish that the way the first sequence goes is it makes it seem like it's a dream sequence kind of thing. And I was hoping the rest of them would be like that, but they don't really make any sense as to them being dream sequences because they involve shit that has nothing that he would have known ahead of time.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And impossible tasks that happen as well.
Exactly. Like one of them is like he's not big enough to do that on his own kind of thing. And so it's like, so it had to have happened or something. Like that sort of thing.
There's definitely some magical realism or fantastical elements that are... the ambiguity, I think, is incredibly charming when he talks to his dog. But the ambiguity, I think, goes right out the window, which I don't think is a bad thing, when Mirai shows up and starts talking to him. Because then they do something together where it's like, oh, okay, this isn't his imagination because a four-year-old can't do that, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, but then that's the funny thing where, like, that stuff will happen. And I actually really like that segment when his sister shows up. But then she disappears for a huge chunk of the film, too. So it's like, well, it really isn't even about Mirai from the future because Mirai from the future only shows up for maybe two-ish, slightly three of the segments. So I'm just like, so what's the focus of this story? It seems like it's just a little scatterbrained at points. I don't know. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I felt like I get what you mean because at first it feels kind of scatterbrained, but I got a specific moral out of it by the time the movie was over that kind of, you know, blended together, I think. But that's just me, I guess, because it was very much... It's like I can't say it too much without spoiling it, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. No, and I agree, because that's one of the things that, like, I see what they're trying to get at. I just felt like it wasn't always sure where it was going with the story. But once it got there, I mean, it was touching, it was rewarding. It was just the problem, again, that with the cycle that it was going through, I was getting a little fatigued with it.
The problem I had with the cycle was that sometimes the cycle didn't make any sense. Because there's, like, later on, like, he's learning to ride a bike, and then a certain sequence happens, and you're like, but what was the point of that sequence? And, like... Like at all.
Well, with this type of storytelling, you know, what was the point of that? I literally heard myself in my brain go, but what's the point of anything?
Well, and it's funny, too, because, I mean, like, one of the things that makes it interesting is that I really did attach to his parents, but there was a point where I had to get over the fact, it's like, man, his dad is just completely incompetent throughout a lot of this movie.
His dad is stupid.
Yeah, no, there's a point where you're like, dude, I mean, it's common sense. You just do that stuff. Like, you know, even if you're not super parent, This is like literally the answer to the question. You know what you need to do.
Well, there's a part where like he literally walks away from Mirai, and I'm like, dude, don't just leave her over there.
Oh yeah, no, just this random lady who apparently was speaking English at that point.
Out of nowhere, too.
Yeah, that was so weird. I'm just like, wait a minute, she's an American tourist? No, just some random
lady. Well, yeah, she totally looked American. She had the blonde hair, which I know is confusing for an anime, because
yeah,
usually...
Yeah, but then she replies back to her in Japanese, which was like, okay, I don't know what was going on.
And she has like three lines. She says, hi there, and they're like out of nowhere in the middle of a super Japanese like... movie.
I think she said, are you okay? Yeah, like,
yeah, but even then, it's like, yeah, nice lady or not. Yeah, leaving his baby there while helping Mirai with his other problem, just like, no.
It was just so fucking
tourist
weird.
Tourist at the park.
And then, like, there's a part where they ask him to do something, and he just never fucking takes the hint to do the goddamn thing.
Like, literally, he gets told over and over again, why don't we do this? And he's like,
he's like, I'm an architect. I'm like, that's cool, bro, but you're not very smart.
Yeah. I mean, I guess he kind of warms up a little bit in the end, but that was a little bit of a barrier to liking him. But I thought the mom was actually pretty interesting. And actually, some of the most effective moments happen when she's just, like, talking to her mom or talking to the children. I thought, like, it really – that should have been more of the focus of the story.
Well, the issues I have with the dad is that one of the fantastical elements is very much pointed at her, and he gets like maybe 10 seconds of a fantastical element. Like towards the very end, they're like, oh yeah, the dad, hey, here's a thing he did one time. And I was like, what?
He must have just been really that uninteresting as a child.
It was really funny to me, because out of nowhere, like, I guess I'll just spoil it because it's literally like 10 seconds. Like, there's a part where they're, like, about to do something, and they just go, yeah, that's the time Dad tried to learn a bike or something. Don't worry about it. And they just go on.
I mean, even there's the one where the mom's looking through the scrapbook and going like, okay, this is all this stuff, and that's when I met your dad, and then we're moving on from that. Like, he's just such a non-entity in the story. Now, what's interesting, too, is that we actually got the subbed version of this, so it's in Japanese completely, and I don't know if they're releasing this with the English audio in America, but they do have the voice cast here for people in English, because the parents are being played by John Cho and Rebecca Hall. And at some point, now looking at that, I'm like, I can kind of see John Cho playing that role. You know,
absolutely.
That
A character that no one pays attention to, I could see John Cho.
The Sulu,
come on. Yeah, he gets no regard, yeah.
And then also I noticed that, which there's another character, I won't spoil who it is, but he's being played by Daniel Dae Kim, where I'm just like, wow, they got a pretty, you know, diverse cast of nationalities to play the roles in this movie, which is pretty cool, I think.
Absolutely.
You know, I'll say this too, that this movie is pretty good looking. Like, I guess the moments that I was more impressed with, again, weren't really the magical realism elements, but some of the subtle touches they did for animating, like, faces and expressions, they were pretty good throughout the entire film.
There was very subtle things that were just, like, gorgeous. And so, like, the whole movie's just gorgeous to look at. Like, when you look at the toys that he has, like, a lot of trains. And they're just, like, they're really detailed. And there's Apple products all over this fucking movie. Right. But they're, like, really well-detailed Apple products. And you're just like, man, that looks like a really nice-looking iPad in anime form.
Yeah, my favorite was the scenery in his backyard. I'm not sure if he really had this in his backyard or if it was part of his dream, but there was this cobblestone-surrounded fountain. And, like, man, that must have took some hours to draw out. Beautiful.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. And then there's the big segment in the last fantastical bit, which, again, I won't spoil nothing, but there's some pretty impressive imagery there. Like, especially, there's one character who shows up in that whose animation style is completely unlike any other character in this movie. It's just so jarring. I'm like, huh.
He looked like something that came out of The Adventures of Gumball. Or The Amazing World of Gumball. Yeah. Like, the first time I saw him, I was like, where the fuck did this Gumball character come from?
Yeah. He even had kind of mannerisms like you'd see in a Gumball segment from a weird...
But it was amazing because of it, because it's so surreal because of the sequence. And there's even, like, another little character that also looks like something that would have came out of Gumball. Like, the entire sequence just feels like something that would come out of Gumball, I'm not gonna lie.
Even the way it's written and performed. Yeah, I totally see that, actually.
It does kind of enter into too scary for children territory in that particular sequence.
You know, okay,
that might just be, well, maybe not. Maybe young children, but I think
I thought it looked cool as shit, especially the design of some of the trains that show up in it. Especially that one train. I'm like, this train is rad as shit.
Oh, yeah. No, but that's actually an interesting point, because I've seen some reviews for this movie, and there's been a debate on who the audience for this movie is, because on the one hand, you can say, yeah, there's some stuff in here that's actually kind of freaky or dark for children, but then there's a lot of it that's very light and fluffy. So it's like, it's a movie with a message. It's not a terribly deep message, but it's one that's done with a little bit of somewhat of sense and realism. So I don't know if that's – I don't know if you guys agree that maybe a little bit where there's an issue of who the audience is that this movie's trying to attract to it.
No, I can definitely see that, especially with some of the later sequences, because because it's just like random weird shit for weird shit's sake is what it feels like, and like because that last sequence is so much darker than the rest of it, like out of fucking nowhere. Like the one before that is like has one part of darkness, maybe part of it, and it's not even all that dark. It's just out of nowhere.
Well, not being selfish is the hardest thing for a child to learn. And some children never learn that. They're noticeable when you meet them as adults, you know? So I think the last sequence had to be scary.
It hints at that he might be just like a totally selfish kid the rest of his life, too. It's like, so then is he actually going to learn anything in this movie? Because so far he hasn't, and he won't. He actively fights it.
Yeah, there's like a small spoiler. Like you see somebody, and you're pretty sure you know who he is, like from the get go, and he's kind of an asshole, and you're just like, and then it goes in the future. Yeah, that's that asshole's still you because you're an asshole still. It's like, well, what did you learn then? Like to be a lower voiced asshole? Is that what it is? You're no longer screaming at people.
He tells himself what he learned in not so many words, and the way he tells him is like how an asshole would tell someone something. So it is interesting. I'm not sure if you ever really find out if he's practicing what he preaches, but yeah, I don't know, guys. That sounds true to life to me in a lot of situations.
Well, the thing is, when you look at it, like it makes sense either way when you look at it, because you look at it at the age he is in the movie. He's a kid. He doesn't know how emotions work. He's just going to be an asshole about things. And then when you're a teenager, you're an asshole because you think you know what you're doing. And so it's just those two parts. We don't see the middle where he's probably not an asshole, or the afterwards where he's probably not an asshole. Like, it's just kind of strange to me.
Well, for me, I knew absolutely everything there was to know about anything until I was like, it was 22 when I realized that was all nonsense.
Yeah, because you watched Evangelion enough times, and you're like, I know how the world works. And then you realize that's not how it works.
And now you can watch it on Netflix.
Exactly.
So, yeah, 15 years after I watched Evangelion, I was like, oh, Shinji's depressed.
And he only masturbated to his mom in that movie because he was depressed.
Anyway,
kids movie.
A lot of deep cuts.
Yeah, but you know, before we get into the final thoughts, I want to ask you, Brad, because I know you are a parent, that you actually have quite a few kids. Like, how do you think that affects your perception of watching how parenting is being portrayed in this movie?
Oh, how does it affect it? Well, you said earlier, like, who is this even for? It's so weird and random at a lot of times. The kids are kind of snotty. I mean, if you don't have kids and you're watching this, I'd imagine during a particular fantastical sequence where he meets another child, and I won't go any further than that, what they do together, I'd imagine, would make a lot of childless people say, I never want to have kids ever. That looks like a nightmare.
Show some people's like, oh yeah, you know, maybe I was kind of a jerk too when I was a child, which is a theme that seems to be discussed in this movie. So,
well, who remembers when they were a toddler or a 4-year-old, you know? But
well funny enough, there was one moment in here that was very much a moment where I'm like, oh yeah, I did that too. You know, I'm just like, I'm not going to say what, but I'm just gonna be like, yeah, that was very much a moment, because I actually have evidence of that as well through old videotapes. It's like, yep, I did that same exact thing. So.
Yeah, but who is this for exactly? It's for me, guys. I absolutely adore and love this movie.
Oh, really?
We'll probably watch it 100 times and rewatch it, probably at least once a year. I understood absolutely everything about this film. Everything, every like 10 seconds, my heartstrings were like being yanked. From Coon's little yawn to him stepping over his train set because he doesn't want to hurt his trains. Oh, but F the kitchen, you know, that's not important to him. I know that, like, you can see that and be like, what a little bastard. But for me that has seen that 7 times with little ones that have my face, I'm like, aw. What a cutie.
Aw, okay. No, that's interesting because I think that is something where maybe having a different perspective will affect the way that you watch this movie. Because I know for, you know, probably Michael and I, we both share a little bit of that where it's just like, yeah, this kid's a little jerk off kind of thing. But it's like, but at least you, it's like, okay, fair. Like, I mean, I have to imagine that maybe you related a little bit to the dad too, which kind of scares me if you do. But
well, I related a little bit to the dad because I was the uncle who helped raise my niece. And I was that dude who's just like, I don't really want to do nothing.
Yeah, and it's exhausting, you know, especially when it's your first or second go raising a kid, a niece especially. I'm sure that comes with a huge other different pile of baggage just thrown at you. But yeah, I mean, I think they nailed the father being exhausted. And I still do that to my kids where they're like, Atasan, or, sorry, father, and I'll be like, mm-hmm, yeah.
Yeah, I did that to my parents all the time. I do that to my mom now.
Mom,
is the turkey ready? Mom.
Yeah, I'll still be like, mm-hmm, yeah, turkey, very good turkey drawing. Let's put it on the fridge, uh-huh.
Well, I'm
zone
sure.
Zone out response is what we call it. It's not nice, and I'm working on it, but.
Yeah, well, that'll be.
Yeah, I adore this movie, you guys.
That's awesome. So, you know what, why don't you segue? What are your final thoughts and rating on this?
Well, the animation, of course, is top-notch. The storytelling, as far as everything connects, for me, I saw everything connecting in a very sentimental and cheery way, which I can demonstrate with a story. My wife cooks, right? My wife cooks. The first time she cooked for me, and she's like practically a professional cook, I ate it. And from then on, I think I was madly in love with her. And I said, how did you learn how to do this? So she told me, oh, my mom taught me how to cook. So I went to her mom. He said, hey, you want to cook us a meal here? She cooked us a meal. I ate it. And how did you learn how to do this? She's like, oh, my mother taught me. And her mother had passed away, so I never got to meet her. But it literally goes back generations, you guys. And this film, its message really touches upon how important all of us are, not just as individuals in our family, but as a group. You know, the family roots, and I haven't seen anything like that in a long time. And just to end my story, to put an exclamation on the point and why I love this movie so much. I was exhausted one day watching these 4 kids. I had 5 kids. I didn't need to watch the oldest because he can handle his own. And I'm sitting at the table and I'm like, because I just made all these peanut butter sandwiches. And they're gross because they're not like mom's. I related to that situation too when Coon was like, I don't want you, I want mom. Yep, I've heard that my whole life. So, yeah, I made these sandwiches. And then my Samuel, he puts a plate down in front of me, and it's eggs and toast. And he says, oh, you looked hungry, so I made this for you. And it was amazing. And I'm like, Sam, how did you learn how to do this? And he's like, my mom taught me. And, yeah.
And then, you're, day, and then you
he's
going to
make
mom.
Eggs. So then, exactly, I asked Amy, you taught him how to make eggs? And she said, oh, I think my mom, Denise, did it. I'm like, Denise, you taught him how to make eggs? And she's like, yeah. A boy that age should know how to make eggs.
It sounds so like anyways, that story repeats itself a lot with you. So,
and then he had a fantastic LSD dream where he talked to the grandmother.
The grandmother's cat told
me. Exactly.
And, so yeah, he's going to give eggs to someone one day and they're going to fall in love with him. And I'm going to be like, mm-hmm, family's important. That's right. So I absolutely adore this film. 10 out of 10 for me.
Oh, wow. 10 out of 10 what's, though?
Let's see. 10 out of 10 acid trips taken by 4 kids that were all related.
Okay.
But yeah, instant classic, favorite animated film by far, especially after Incredibles kind of disappointed. Good luck to Enter the Spider-Verse. See if you can dethrone that for me. But yeah, why don't you guys tell me, as childless people...
I'll go. Overall, I enjoyed this film. Like, as much shit as I've been talking about this film, I actually enjoyed it quite a bit. I thought the voice acting was really good, especially for Coon, who has to carry this film a lot, even though he's, like, it has to be, like, they have to act like a four-year-old the entire time.
Right.
The voice work was, yeah, I thought it was really good. I thought Mirai's character design was really interesting, especially that part with her her hand, because it's this little, it's like a bruise, or it's like a birthmark, essentially.
Yeah.
She's always had it.
Which I thought was really cool. I thought it was weird that her hair was darker when she was in the future for some reason.
There was inconsistent hair design with this, where, like, even, you know, you kind of hinted a little bit at, like, Coon in the version of him. It's like, yeah, his hair didn't match either. I'm just like, so did they just... Sometimes people's hair, like, I used to be a really bright blonde, and now I'm kind of like a dirty brown blonde kind of thing, but, like, it's very jarring when you first see that.
Yeah, it caught me off guard. I loved every sequence with the dog. Like, every time the dog did something.
Yeah, Yuko.
And there's a point where, I'm just going to say this because it's very important to what the dog does later, is that the first fantastical sequence is he meets, like, his dog as a person. But every now and then when it would cut back to the dog would have the person face instead of just his normal face. And then my roommate pointed this out, is that sometimes when he barks, it's the voice actor barking instead of an actual dog barking like it was early on, which I thought was a really nice touch because I didn't even notice it at first until my roommate was like, yeah, that's fucking weird. And I was like, that's really cool.
It's very Miyazaki-like, right?
Exactly. Like, all of the sequences with the other... You know, flashbacks, flash forwards, whatever the last one is, is very interesting because it's a lot of, like, interesting, like you said, it's all about the importance of family and living in the now is the other part of it, is it's very much like, hey, this is what's going on with your life right now, cherish what's going on right now, and also the subplot with his parents growing even more because of their second child, which I thought was really nice because that's how a lot of parents are, is that once they get to their second child, you know, they start getting what they call their shit together, even though it's not necessarily that. It's just it's just what it says. Like, the second child's always the easier one than the first time. But other than Coco, you know, this is one of those movies that teaches the importance of family really well. And like you said, like, it's all about the importance of what you've learned over the generations. Even if that lesson sometimes doesn't make too much sense, like the one where, like, I'm gonna say it because it's like a line in the movie where it's like, when you ride a bike, you can ride an airplane and ride a ship and stuff. I'm like, that doesn't make any fucking sense, but okay. But
how hard can it be, right? You just push the plane forward, it goes forward, you know.
Yeah, I was like, that's dumb, but sorry, I digress. The movie is gorgeous. The voice acting's pretty on point with the Japanese version. The subtitles probably, if they're the same as it was here, they could use a little work, because there's a part where they keep saying folklore instead of, they could have just used the word story. But other than that, I thought it was great. Yeah. I personally would give it 8.5 tantrums out of 10.
Yeah, there you go. That's a much nicer review.
There were a lot of tantrums.
Good on you.
A shit ton of them.
Yeah. I love how they get red in the face, too. I seen it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
The glasses I had on this one, guys, rose-colored. Every time little Coon or little Mirai did anything, I'd be like, aww.
Yeah.
just like little da-da-da. I'm sorry, your final thoughts?
Oh, no worries. I feel like I'm not as in love with this movie as both you guys are, which is rare, because usually I'm the nice guy on these reviews. But I do think there is a lot of great stuff in this. And I do have to say, one thing I love about anime, on the whole, because, I mean, it's not true for every case, but they're more willing to show stories that don't have to be, you know, just totally popcorn and goofy for animated films like American films do. Like, you know, so many of our American animated films have to be these nutty, crazy, zany, fantastical stories, like Into the Spider-Verse probably will be. But I kind of like when they have the moments to be quiet. You know, when they have to, those moments that are very insularly focused or very small in their scope. And I think that's a great thing that this movie does well, is those small in scope moments where even there's a great conversation that the mom has with her mom, you know, with the grandma in the story. And it's just it's a very quick scene. It's only a couple minutes, but it felt real. It felt like, yeah, how a mother would talk to their mother. It's like, how do I do what you did? And it's like, well, I mean, you know, he's acting the way that you did when you were a child, and the way that I handled it was very similar, but then you just learn how to do better, you know, kind of thing like that. It's great little lessons like that throughout this movie. I did notice sometimes that they would recycle certain animations that did kind of bug me, like every time, well, at least the first three times that Kun goes into his fantastical little zones and that stuff, it's always that same sweeping, like, thing going around him.
I watch a lot of Dragon Ball, so I'm used to repeated animations.
Yeah, same here.
Oh, I do too, but I am glad they stopped doing it. When they stopped doing it at one point, I'm like, okay, thank you. It can't be the same exact animation every single time.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, but no, I did enjoy this on the whole. I think, let's see, I would give it 8 out of 10 scenes of a fully grown man playing fetch like a dog. That was definitely my favorite part of the whole movie, because just like, okay,
I was such a big fan of that part. Like, when that entire sequence starts, I was staring at him trying to figure out who he was, because I was like, this little kid looks familiar. And then once I was really looking at his coat, I'm like, oh, that's super fucking clever.
What he had to say, definitely the best dialogue in the movie as well, I think. Well, not the best dialogue, but
well, it's
most comedic.
What I love about the sequence with him is that, like, every line he says is a hint to what he is before the reveal.
Yeah.
And it's so fucking cool.
No, it was very clever, and I really bet that a lot. So, I mean, I think, you know, it's funny, this is one of those films that's actually going to be pushed for the Oscar this year. So obviously it depends on who makes the qualifying list. But do you think this has any potential to beat out the other animated films for...
I mean, fuck
if
no.
not win.
No. My favorite animated films never get nominated. I was a huge fan of the Lego movie. I loved Lego Batman. I loved Your Name. And they're just ignored. And it's just a Pixar.
It's always a Pixar thing. Yeah, like fucking Incredibles 2 came out. It's going to be the one, I guarantee you.
Incredibles 2 was good. It was good, but...
I liked it, but it's not this movie per se.
No. And that's what I'm saying. Like, if anything, maybe it can at least be a nominee. Like, I feel like that should... It should at least get some, like, hint of acknowledgement.
I'm okay with it being nominated. Like, I think it should be at least nominated so people can find out about it more.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I always appreciate the diverse nominations.
Yeah, so, hey, yeah, if this is playing near you, I think we all generally say, go watch it. It'd be worth your time, especially if you have children. So, yeah, absolutely.